fear of nuclear accidents was intensified by disastrous events at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania in 1979 and by an especially frightening calamity in Chernobyl in the Soviet Union in 1986. All of this was having an effect on the once booming nuclear industry. By 1994, the Tennessee Valley Authority had stopped the construction of three nuclear plants, which the New York Times called the symbolic death notice for the current generation of reactors in the United States. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, thousands of people demonstrated year after year against the Honeywell Corporation's military contracts, and between 1982 and 1988, over 1,800 people were arrested. Furthermore, when those who engaged in such civil disobedience were brought into court, they often found sympathetic support from juries, winning acquittals from ordinary citizens who seemed to understand that even if they had technically broken the law, they had done so in a good cause. In 1984, a group of Vermont citizens, the Winooski 44, refused to leave the hallway outside a U.S. senator's office, protesting his votes to give arms to the Nicaraguan Contras. They were arrested, but at their trial they were treated sympathetically by the judge and acquitted by the jury. At another trial shortly after, a number of people, including activist Abby Hoffman and Amy Carter, daughter of former President Jimmy Carter, were charged with blocking CIA recruiters at the University of Massachusetts. They called to the witness stand ex-CIA agents who told the jury that the CIA had engaged in illegal and murderous activities all around the world. The jury acquitted them. One juror, a woman hospital worker, said later, "I was not familiar with the CIA's activities. I was shocked. I was kind of proud of the students." Another juror said, "It was very educational." The county district attorney prosecuting the case concluded, "If there is a message, it was that this jury was composed of Middle America. Middle America doesn't want the CIA doing what they are doing." In the South, while there was no great movement comparable to the civil rights movement of the 60s, there were hundreds of local groups organizing poor people, white and black. In North Carolina, Linda Stout, the daughter of a mill worker who had died of industrial poisons, coordinated a multiracial network of 500 textile workers, farmers, maids, most of them low-income women of color, in the Piedmont Peace Project. The historic Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, which had nurtured so many black and white activists throughout the South, was now joined by other folk schools and popular education centers. Anne Braden, a veteran of racial and labor struggles in the South, was still organizing, leading the Southern Organizing Committee for Economic and Social Justice. The group gave help in local actions to 300 African Americans in Tift County, Georgia, who were protesting the existence of a chemical plant which was making them sick, to Native Americans in Cherokee County, North Carolina, who were organizing to stop a polluted landfill. Back in the 60s, Chicano farm workers, people of Mexican descent who came to work and live mostly in California and the southwestern states, rebelled against their feudal working conditions. They went out on strike and organized a national boycott of grapes under the leadership of Cesar Chavez. Soon, farm workers were organizing in other parts of the country. In the 70s and 80s, their struggles against poverty and discrimination continued. The Reagan years hit them hard, as it did poor people all over the country. By 1984, 42% of all Latino children and 1/4 of the families lived below the poverty line. Copper miners in Arizona, mostly Mexican, went on strike against the Phelps Dodge Company after it cut wages, benefits, and safety measures in 1983. They were attacked by National Guardsmen and state troopers, by tear gas and helicopters, but held out for 3 years until a combination of governmental and corporate power finally defeated them. There were victories, too. In 1985, 1,700 cannery workers, most of them Mexican women, went on strike in Watsonville, California, and won a union contract with medical benefits. In 1990, workers who had been laid off from the Levi Strauss Company in San Antonio because the company was moving to Costa Rica called a boycott, organized a hunger strike, and won concessions. In Los Angeles, Latino janitors went on strike in 1990, and despite police attacks, won recognition of their union a pay raise, and sick benefits. Latino and Latina activists, not necessarily Chicano, which refers to those of Mexican ancestry, through the 80s and early 90s, campaigned for better labor conditions, for representation in local government, for tenants' rights, for bilingual education in the schools. Kept out of the media, they organized a bilingual radio movement, and by 1991 had 14 Latino stations in the country, 12 of them bilingual. In New Mexico, Latinos fought for land and water rights against real estate developers who tried to throw them off land they had lived on for decades. In 1988, there was a confrontation, and the people organized an armed occupation, built bunkers for protection against attack, and won support from other communities in the Southwest. Finally, a court ruled in their favor. Abnormal rates of cancer for farm workers in California aroused the Chicano community. Cesar Chavez of the United Farm Workers fasted for 35 days in 1988 to call attention to these conditions. There were now United Farm Workers unions in Texas, Arizona, and other states. The importation of Mexican workers for low wages, under terrible conditions, spread from the Southwest to other parts of the country. By 1991, 80,000 Latinos lived in North Carolina, 30,000 in North Georgia. The Farm Labor Organizing Committee, which had won a difficult strike in the Ohio tomato fields in 1979, the largest agricultural strike ever in the Midwest, brought thousands of farm workers together in several Midwest states. As the Latino population of the country kept growing, it soon matched the 12% of the population that was African American and began to have a distinct effect on American culture. Much of its music, art, and drama was much more consciously political and satirical than mainstream culture. The Border Arts Workshop was formed in 1984 by artists and writers in San Diego and Tijuana, and its work dealt powerfully with issues of racism and injustice. In Northern California, Teatro Campesino and Teatro de la Esperanza performed for working people all over the country, turning schoolhouses, churches, and fields into theaters. Latinos were especially conscious of the imperial role the United States had played in Mexico and the Caribbean, and many of them became militant critics of U.S. policy toward Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Cuba. In 1970, a great march in Los Angeles against the Vietnam War, which had been attacked by police, left three Chicanos dead. When the Bush administration was preparing for war against Iraq in the summer of 1990, thousands of people in Los Angeles marched along the same route they had taken 20 years before when they were protesting the Vietnam War. As Elizabeth Martinet wrote, 500 Years of Chicano History in Pictures, before enduring President Bush's war in the Persian Gulf, many people, including Raza, literally race, a term adopted by Latino activists, had doubts about it or were opposed. We had learned some lessons about wars started in the name of democracy that turned out to benefit only the rich and powerful. Raza mobilized to protest this war of mass murder even faster than the U.S. war in Vietnam, though we could not stop it. In 1992, a fundraising group which came out of the Vietnam War called Resist made donations to 168 organizations around the country, community groups, peace groups, Native American groups, prisoners' rights organizations, health and environmental groups. A new generation of lawyers, schooled in the 60s, constituted a small but socially conscious minority within the legal profession. They were in court defending the poor and the helpless, or bringing suit against powerful corporations. One law firm used its talent and energy to defend whistleblowers, men and women who were fired because they blew the whistle on corporate corruption that victimized the public. The women's movement, which had managed to raise the consciousness of the whole nation on the issue of sexual equality, faced a powerful backlash in the 80s. The Supreme Court's defense of abortion rights in its 1973 Roe v. Wade decision aroused a pro-life movement that had strong supporters in Washington. Congress passed, and the Supreme Court later let stand, a law that eliminated federal medical benefits to help poor women pay for abortions. But the National Organization of Women and other groups remained strong. In 1989, a Washington rally for what had come to be known as the right to choose drew over 300,000 people. When in 1994 and 1995, abortion clinics were attacked and several supporters murdered, the conflict became grimly intense. The rights of gay and lesbian Americans had come vividly to the forefront in the 70s with radical changes in ideas about sexuality and freedom. The gay movement then became a visible presence in the nation, with parades, demonstrations, campaigns for the elimination of state statutes discriminating against homosexuals. One result was a growing literature about the hidden history of gay life in the United States and in Europe. In 1994, there was a Stonewall 25 march in Manhattan, which commemorated an event homosexuals regarded as a turning point. 25 years earlier, gay men fought back vigorously against a police raid on the Stonewall Bar in Greenwich Village. In the early 90s, gay and lesbian groups campaigned more openly, more determinedly, against discrimination, and for more attention to the scourge of AIDS, which they claimed was being given only marginal attention by the national government. In Rochester, New York, a local campaign achieved an unprecedented decision barring military recruiters from a school district because of the Defense Department discrimination against gay soldiers.